the Forged and Unbroken podcast.
Starting out, I know you've done a lot of moving around within your fire service tenure. Now you've got decades. You've got decades in this place, right?
Yeah. So, sometimes I hate to admit that, but yeah, I do. Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing. How many years is it total now?
I'm in my 51st year hanging around firehouses. I started when I was 16 up on Long Island. So, and I'm 67. So you do the math, it comes out to like 51.
Man, that's amazing. That's so cool. In that 51 years starting in Long Island, I know a good core of that was in New Jersey, correct?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Could you rattle off some of the places that you've been? Because like I said, you've moved around in this 51 years. Where is this journey taking you?
Sure. So the biggest part was in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, which is right outside Philadelphia for the Jersey guys, exit 4 on the Pike. I was there for a little over 18 years. I spent the last 10 years as a battalion chief. I was a shift commander out in operations. Like 6 months before I retired, they moved me over to headquarters, gave me a staff job because I was, phasing out. Mm-hmm. So I retired from there. We moved to North Carolina up in the mountains. I was an assistant chief with the volunteer fire department, but that's where I ended up going overseas. I did 3 years in Iraq and Afghanistan doing the private security thing. I spent a little time with Dine Corps, and then I went over to Blackwater. When I came home from that, I was still kind of young, just felt like I still had more to do. And I ended up going to Sunrise Beach, Missouri as the fire chief. And I was out there for close to 8 years. Spent 8 years, did a lot of stuff out there. Sunrise Beach was, it was a small place, and they just needed to make some changes, and they brought me in as the change agent, and we did a lot of fantastic work. When I left there, I was very happy with where the organization was. I went to California to be close to my daughter and our grandkids, and I was out there for 2 years, and nothing against California and nothing against the California people. But quite honestly, with rare exceptions, if you go west of the Mississippi and you've spent your life east of the Mississippi, it's kind of a square peg in a round hole. And and I'm not going to point at them. I'm going to say it wasn't a good fit for Dennis. I just didn't have, the right sum total of stuff to really kind of fit in. So, we came to a decision that, it was a square peg in a round hole and best for me to move on. And I went to Pittsburgh, Kansas, which is in the southeast corner of Kansas. And I was there for 2 years. And, I had the experience that a lot of my fire chief friends told me I was going to have that I didn't believe. Because, I was all set, I'm going to stay there for a couple years. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I've had a ton of fire chiefs tell me, you're going to wake up one day and you're just going to say, hey, man, this is the day. You've done as much as you can. You've contributed as much as you can. And you're just at that point in your life where it's time to move on. And being a fire chief takes a toll. I'm not going to stick up for fire chiefs because I know there's a lot of good chiefs out there and there's a lot of chiefs that are not doing good things. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're a great chief or a bad chief. Being in that, being in that corner office with the five trumpets takes a toll. And, I woke up one morning and because we'd already bought the house here in Florida, because the long term, and I'm a long term planner, man. I'm looking, way down the road. Where do I want to be? Whatever. I wanted to live, close to the beach, and I wanted to live in Florida. So we already had the house here. It's October. I wake up, it's like, man, I'm getting ready for another Kansas winter. I'm getting older. It's, I've been here for 2 years. We've done a bunch of stuff, and it's just, I called the city manager and I said, hey, listen, I think it's time for me to move on. And when they brought me to Kansas, I mean, they knew how old I was. They knew that, they weren't hiring a guy who was 32 years old, who's going to be there for 20 years. They knew that I was just going to be there for, you know, a short amount of time. So I called the city manager and he goes, yeah, you know, we get it. And we, you know, brokered an agreement and I moved to Florida. So that's my journey.
Man, that's amazing. I got a couple things I want to dig in on. I get the first, since it's the most recent, I think this is probably largely a subjective question. Do you think that when you hit that fire chief level, that there should be some type of tenure agreement? Like, I don't want to go as far as saying like a term limit, like sure. Politicians, but do you think that like maybe there needs to be some awareness or like, hey, I think you're right. Some chiefs might be a little tone deaf, like, hey man, it's probably time to move on. And then there's some chiefs that do great and you want them to hang out longer, but it's, I mean, I know it's a subjective question there.
I think anybody who goes in that position should go into it with the mindset of, listen, I'm going to spend about, depending on the culture of the organization, a bunch of factors, I'm going to spend anywhere from maybe 2 to 5 years. And when I hit that mark, I'm going to look real hard at where I am, what I'm doing, and am I contributing? In the times when I was a fire chief, and I think this is very true, I took the organization as far as Dennis could take it. Mm-hmm. And there's just that upper limit. And no matter who you are, there's going to be that upper limit. Now, it's going to be different for different people because of personalities and abilities and all those other type of things. But there's going to be that upper limit. And I think that chiefs need to be very cognizant of that fact. And, you know, look back and say, okay, am I at that point? If so, for the betterment of everybody involved, including yourself, then that's time that, you know, you need to move on. I have a lecture that I give to chiefs, and I say, you know, from day one, start having your exit plan. You know, just don't talk about it, but have your plan in place, because you're going to wake up one day and you're going to say, hey, this is the day. I'm a little bit burned out. I can't go any farther. You're going to get into a conflict with somebody. You're going to get into a conflict with a city manager. You're going to have a labor management issue. All of these type of things are issues that chiefs get into. And if you don't have that plan from day one, you become very reactionary when these issues happen. And nobody wins in that situation. And I think it's just a reality of being a fire chief. At some point, that comes along. So in a way, I totally agree with you where, you know, there should be that point where you become self-reflective. Hopefully, they hire chiefs that have that ability to be self-reflective, that, you know, are willing to ask themselves the difficult questions before other people start saying, hey, you know, where are you? And I worked with chiefs. I see this from both sides, you know, as being a fire chief, but I've worked for chiefs where you say, you should have gone like 5 years ago, bro.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's out there.
Yeah, for sure. I really like what you said there. You got to be self-reflective. You really got to have some awareness, checking on yourselves and on the hiring side.
Yeah.
Hopefully culturally they're finding the chiefs that have that skill set. I think it's great.
I'd say on the hiring side, you know, the question is, when you hire a chief, what are your expectations? What do you want this person to do? You know, if you just want them to keep the seat warm, well, you can put anybody in the seat. But if I bring somebody in to operate at that level, I want to have some expectations for them. I want to say, hey, listen, 2 years from now, when I look at the fire department, these are the things that I want to see, but I don't see now. And I think that gives the person coming in the roadmap on what they should be looking at. And then, you know, 2, 5, 7 years, whatever that time limit is, you come back and you look at it and say, okay, these were your expectations. This is where you are. And I think going in as a chief, you gotta realize, you know, the true nature. If you're not making the expectations, then, you know, hey, You probably need, you need to do something because, the world isn't standing still. The citizens deserve. And if the person who's in charge isn't meeting those expectations, then, either they've got to retool or move on.
Yeah, I'm with you. Clear expectations up front, I feel like, take care of so many downstream issues. There's accountability there. There's vision. There's benchmarks. And it's such a simple thing that we can get out in front of, Something that kind of interests me is your time overseas. You were talking about having that experience. You said 3 years?
3 years.
Yeah. How much of a departure was that from the norm of the fire service? And just like, what are some of the standout, like either lessons or memories or skills or whatever, learning curve? That's a fantastic experience that is a departure from the fire side of things.
Well, certainly what I was doing, we weren't responding to fires. We were doing, high threat, high risk protection in probably some of the most dangerous places on the face of the earth. And I'm not a superstar, man. I'm not, I'm not a Green Beret. I'm not a SEAL. I'm none of those things. I was in the Army for 7 years and I happened to be an EMTI, and that's what they were looking for. Fill the medic slots on these protection teams. And what I learned is, I learned so much from it. It was such a great experience because you get put on, I got put on a team where there were a bunch of Rangers, a couple SEALs, and some other dudes, and it was really, really evident from day one, earn your spot.
Yeah,
just that simple. Earn your spot. And the unique thing about that place is if you didn't earn your spot, you were gone. It was just that simple. There was no middle of the road. Now, well, he's kind of a good guy and, maybe we can keep him. This is serious business. When we went out of the green zone, there was a big sign, a big red sign as you went through the gate. You are leaving the green. Make sure your weapon is ready. It's like, uh-oh. Because you get on the other side of that gate and bad things can happen. And what I say, where it really helped me is to keep that operational focus when I came back into the fire service. Because you can work in small town America, not do a whole bunch of runs, nice, calm, quiet agency, and then in the blink of an eye, you can be in a life and death situation. And it just, my experiences overseas taught me that you always have to be prepared because you don't know what's around the next corner. And I think a lot of people, they get comfortable, they get complacent, they say, well, it's not going to happen here. This is the way we've always done stuff. And my overseas experience just showed me that those are fatal attitudes that can eventually, come back and can bite you, bite you pretty seriously. And, another thing that it taught me is if you're willing to do the work, there's a seat for you at the table. I was in my mid-50s when I went over there. I was old. People looked at me. I was like grandpa compared to some of the people on the team. And all I had to do was do the work to prove that I was capable of doing my job. And, once I proved that, the guys were like, yeah, man, Doc's okay. We're good with Doc. There were teams, I moved around a little bit because of lead blocks and whatever. I had to be home at a certain time, and the team I was on, my lead block didn't line up with that. My daughter was getting married. So, they talked to all the team leaders, say, hey, listen, man. And, the team leader who, if I went to that team, my lead block would line up to where I needed to be. Team leader said, yeah, man, Doc's got a solid reputation. We'll take him. And I moved teams, and, I walked through the door in the team room, and it's like, hey, man, how's it going? And I'd built that reputation of being a solid guy. So what I say to firefighters is if you want to have that rep, all you got to do is the work. There's no secret sauce. It's just do the work, do the job. that you've been hired to do, do it well, and be that person people depend on. And if you do those things, you will be very successful.
I love that. And I love what you said about fatal attitudes and just like earning your spot. It's in your face, right? It's very apparent. There's no softness to it, right?
No.
What was a fire service skill, culture, mindset that worked really well in those team environments that otherwise they would not have had from, you know, the police military side of things? Like, what was there anything they're like, oh wow, like we don't have this in our arena? Like they or you noticed a need or maybe a hole that the fire service brought into that.
You know, that's a hard question to answer. I mean, the only way I can answer that question is to say what has allowed me to, you know, be successful in these environments. And it's discipline, man. That characteristic is self-regulating behavior. I mean, you know, we had a thing when the ambassador was going to go someplace, we had to be at the embassy an hour prior. You know, yep. When the ambassador walks out the door at 9 o'clock and the car's got to be there, the door's got to be open, and a guy's got to be standing there. And that's just discipline. That's that self-regulating behavior. It's no, oh, crap, we slept in, or, oh, there's a mechanical issue, or, oh, there's a problem here. Oh, man, everybody in that organization had a very high level of discipline, self-regulating behavior. And I've always had that as an individual, and it's always worked for me in the fire service. But over there, you see it to the umpteenth degree. And that's why we were very successful in what we did. So I think, you know, that's the element that really drove home for me in that environment that I brought back when I became fire chief in Sunrise Beach, Missouri. You know, and I talked about that all the time with my folks. It's discipline, self-regulating behavior. I tell people, I need you to know your job. I need you to do your job. And I need you to do it without somebody standing over the top of you saying, okay, this is what you've got to do now. Especially in the environments I've worked in, because we've been task saturated and staffing depleted. We haven't had a whole bunch of people. You know, in Sunrise Beach, we weren't going to fires with 20 people. You know, we were going with a real small group of highly trained people, and they've just got to execute. They've got to know what their role is, and they got to go get it done without somebody standing over the top of them. So I don't know if I answered your question or not, but I would say to everybody, if you want to build that solid rep and you want to be that person that people can depend on, you got to be disciplined. Yeah. Absolutely have to. There's no shortcuts when it comes to that.
No, I appreciate that. Like I appreciate how these are just common traits. They're hard traits, they're hard values, but they transcend professions and occupations, right? So as long as you have these mindsets and these skills and things that you nurture and you're self-motivated and it's intrinsic, you can drop yourself in these high performing teams, high risk teams, and still make awesome things happen.
It's a little bit sarcastic, but you know, it's kind of my way. I've always said, man, if you give me enough bananas, I can teach a monkey how to get water out of a fire truck. You know, I can't, you know, it's not that hard, but you know, you're not going to be that problem solver. And you're not going to be that person that's got that, you know, overall capability to drop into these environments. The skills themselves, I mean, with enough time and a little bit of patience, anybody can tie a knot, anybody can throw a ladder. It's, are you going to be able to do that at crunch time? And I think sometimes we focus too much on the skills and we don't focus on the overall things that make people successful in the high stress, high risk environments, stress inoculation, discipline, all those things, being a good team member. You know, you can have great skills and suck as a team member, and the team's going to suffer.
Yep.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. What were some of those cultural differences that you saw among the department? I know you kind of mentioned California a little bit, but I mean, I'm sure that there are some traits and characteristics that are, you know, common throughout the fire service, right? But then there are, I'm sure there's some regional things, whether it's the vernacular or the apparatus or the skill set or just operations in general. I'm sure there's some things that stuck out to you. They're like, oh, wasn't expecting that one going from New York to Jersey to the Carolinas to the Midwest. I mean, there's got to be some cool things that you picked up on.
Yeah. So the Northeast, and, you know, I'll go from like New York down to your area, you know, Metro DC,
yeah.
Everybody's connected. You know, I mean, if like when I went to high school on Long Island, you know, there were a couple kids, their dads worked for the FDNY. I mean, that wasn't, you know, it's,
yeah.
You know, every volley house up on Long Island's got FDNY guys in it and NYPD guys in it. So it just seems like everything is really super connected. You know, down in your region, I don't think you can go into a firehouse where somebody doesn't know somebody on DC or Baltimore.
Yeah, for sure.
And you've got larger agencies. You know, you've got countywide systems. So you've got big systems that move in a lot of different directions. So I think, you know, that's the difference. You know, my experience in the Midwest is, you know, it's just like a little city that doesn't really have this overall connection to the bigger picture. And in California, I think things tend to be very much siloed. You know, like this is us, our department. And for the most part, you don't see a lot of outreach. It's just within an agency. And you know, think about it, you know, there's not a lot of people from the West Coast that are really out there traveling around doing a lot of speaking. There's a couple guys. And yeah. And that's not to say there's not real good people inside the organizations, but they just, you know, they just tend to be a little more siloed. And you certainly have that wildland urban interface issue out there. I mean, and it's a big deal out there, you know, especially in California with statewide mobilizations and everything. And you don't really see that as much in the Midwest or out there on the East Coast. So
yeah, for sure.
Those are the big things, but it's really interesting. At the end of the day, you know, you see good people in all these organizations, and it comes down to human nature, you know, team members, discipline, all those things, you see it across the board. It's just, you know, it's a little bit different. You know, and they wear those, you know, kind of strange looking helmets out there and yellow turnout gear. It's like, all right, whatever. You know?
Yeah. We're the whole wildland interface is like when people ask me questions like, oh, that is a whole other animal that we don't really get exposed to. Like we might have a woodlot on fire. Maybe yeah. From our rural areas, we get a mountain or a mountainside on fire. We're not talking 500,000 acres, like entire counties and districts on fire. Like that's just a whole other realm of firefighting that we're not accustomed to.
That blows into a housing development.
Yeah.
And, right. And you got 20 houses on fire. You got a whole block of house fires. It's like, wow, man. And you know, and for them, it's like, okay, it's fire season, you know, it's like, all right, you know, and we've done this before, you know, we'll do it again. So yeah. it is kind of unique.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I will say that in that ballpark, man, there's nobody better than them guys out, you know, the men and women out on the West Coast, man, they just do a phenomenal job. I mean, sometimes when I look at the mass of fire, you know, how do they not burn down the entire West Coast? And they don't, you know, they just, they know what they're doing. They get at it. They've got good mutual aid. They got good statewide plans. They've got some really fantastic incident commanders, and they just kind of roll up their sleeves. And it's like us going to a house fire. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, we're going to work.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely amazing. Something that one of the first things I picked up on even before we met, you know, following you on social media was your dedication to wellness and fitness. especially at this stage in the game, and I mean that with all due respect, like where you're at in your journey, 51 years in, you're still in the garage in sunny Florida getting it in the humidity, right?
Yeah.
One, has that always been with you? Two, how has that influenced your journey? And three, how do you maintain that dedication here where you're at now in this journey after 51 years in the service?
So, yeah, it's always been with me. I mean, I went in the Army when I was 17, and, you know, and physical fitness was a major part of that. And, you know, I went from the Army to the fire service. It's like, it's a physical job. It's like, look, there's no two ways about it. It's just a physical job. So, you got to get after it. You know, you got to get with it. You know, I never wanted to be the guy who was sitting underneath a tree pouring a bottle of water over his head because he worked for 5 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And as I moved up, as I became a company officer, I told my people, look, we want the hardest job on the firing ramp. I don't want to be, you know, the second or the third string. I mean, I want to be the company when we turn in the block, they say, thank God they're here.
Hell yeah.
They're going to make a difference. Well, in a physical endeavor, if you're not physically fit, you're not going to be that person. Let's strip it all away. I mean, this is a very simple math problem, folks. 1 + 1 = 2. It's just that simple, you know? So get over it, you know? Just go get the work done. How has that impacted me, through this time? It's allowed me to be at it in my 60s. If I haven't been engaged in physical fitness and taking care of myself and starting to look at some other things and performance and whatever, I mean, I wouldn't be still at it after 51 years. I mean, my level of fitness and my attention to wellness has allowed me to continue in a career. And, you know, listen, I'm banged up. You know, my best time, I ran, you know, my best time in a 10K was 42 minutes. So I did, you know, I did 7 minute miles in a 10K. Yeah, right. I can't do that now.
Right.
You know, I can't do it now, but I can still go run a 10K. Okay. My time, you know, my mile times, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know, probably 10:30. But I can go out and run 6 miles if I had to. I'd put my shoes on, I'll go do it right now. Only because I've invested over the decades in fitness. So I don't make it complicated. It's just one of those things you got to do. You know, you got to brush your teeth every day. You know, you got to get up and make the bed. Well, you know, you got to go do PTs. Okay, whatever. It's not a big deal. And, you know, how do I do it now? Well, I still want to have a voice in the service. I still want to contribute. I still want to give back. And if that's what I want to do, people are going to look at me, you know? So if I show up out of shape, overweight, you know, I can't see my feet, you know, I'm not going to have any credibility with the message that I'm trying to impart, you know? And I think that, you know, tactical operations, mental toughness, all these things are, you know, the important things I see in the fire service. So if I'm not setting the example, who's going to listen to me? And you can tell, you can look at people. If you're astute, you can see as soon as the people walk in the room, oh, okay, this is the perfect example of a guy that gives good advice and sets a bad example. You lose credibility.
Yeah. At that point, it's a do as I say, not as I do.
You lose your credibility. I mean, I'm good friends with Basil Ibrahim. I was just down in Leesburg, Florida for the One Bad Tour, 24 hours worth of work. You know, we get a dinner break and we get like an hour and a half nap time at like 3 a.m. I put my bunker pants on at noon and I had them on until 3:00 a.m. And then I took an hour and a half nap and I put them back on. I put my gear on. I went inside the burn building. I'm running around doing all of these things. Well, you know, that's what I want to do. I think that's an important message that I need to send, which is if you do the work and you're committed to it, you can stay in the game for a long time. But if I'm going to send that message, man, I got to do the work every day. I mean, you don't you don't rise to that occasion twice a year. You're able to function at that level because you make investments every day. And it's 1 + 1 = 2. Don't make it any more complicated than that.
Man, I love how simple you're making these messages, but it resonates so deeply. Like to say that this is as you said, it's a physical endeavor. So it's going to require physical effort to overcome these physical endeavors that we're in. It warms my heart that where you're at in your journey, like you are still you're still able to do these things and you are denying the unknown an opportunity to creep in. Like you're like, yeah, no, I can go run a 10K. I know I can do that. I know that I'm capable. There is no second guessing this. And that commands respect. And I don't mean that like in a authoritative way.
Sure.
You are setting the example and you are not leaving any questions behind and you are ensuring competency. And that way people want to follow that. People want to know that that's okay. And if for nothing else, you're just not a liability. We nerded out on this for the training side of things, like the risk aversion. To be physically capable of doing these things is denying risk aversion an opportunity to take a foothold in your organization or in your operations, right? You can lean into the trouble instead of having to second guess yourself. And I wish more people did that, and especially this day and age. Now, I'm sure it's affecting some personal things as well. Like you said you're a father and a great grandfather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and personally and professionally now you're capable and you can enjoy life more fully because you've prepared yourself.
So, and it's funny that, you mentioned, I'm a father, I got grandkids and whatever. I mean, and I say this, I say this all the time. I'm not the warm, fuzzy, grandpa, who wears a t-shirt with a little hand. That's not me. That's not who I am. I'm a provider and a protector. That's the role. That's the roles I see myself in. That's the roles I'm most comfortable in. But if I'm a provider and a protector, if I'm going to do these things I say I am, well, then I've got to be capable of being a provider and a protector.
Yeah, that's simple. It really is.
1 + 1 = 2, folks. It's really that simple. But it goes back to discipline, that characteristic of self-regulating behavior. I mean, if this is the role I see myself in, this is where I want to be, this is where I think that, God or whatever the supreme being has put me on earth to be, then I've got to do the work to assure I can do that.
Yeah, man, so many good things here. We pivoting a little bit, speaking of where our worlds kind of collided here. We just spoke at the Key City Fire Conference. You had a well-attended speech and it was awesome talking about the training. And one component of that was like the common shortcomings or pitfalls and why we need to regulate those and why we need to lean into the hard but efficient training. So if you could, obviously talking about physical fitness is a component of that, but just the skill specific occupational training side of things, you've been doing this a long time. What are these common shortcomings and pitfalls that people are falling into now that we need to overcome in our profession?
So I think, I think certainly, what I call the continuum of training, that crawl, walk, run to produce tactical proficiency. And my question is, are we really doing that? My question to people who are tasked with the responsibility of training and developing competent firefighters, are we truly getting to run tactical proficiency? And my opinion is a lot of places aren't, because it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort. And one of the things that I see is we're not putting the right people into the training divisions. We're not tasking the right people with the responsibility to produce these competent firefighter warriors that can be successful on the fire ground. I think we just come up short. I think that, in our academies, there's a lot of academies. You get a class of 60 people, okay? You get in the middle and you don't do anything really, really stupid, you come out on the other end.
Right.
So are you tactically proficient. I mean, I go back to that, that definition of tactically proficient. Can you generate tempo at a rate faster than your opponent? It's called firefighting. It's not fire watching. Okay. So anytime you're in a fight, the people who win a fight are those that can develop tempo at a rate faster than the opponent.
So, I love that.
So are we doing that? And I think that's where we come up short. And there's a lot of things that come into this. I mean, there's time, there's budget, there's resources. I mean, I get all those things. I mean, I've been fire chief trying to manage budgets and trying to allocate enough money to training and enough staff to training. So what I say is once we get these people out and they have that baseline knowledge, what firehouses do we send them to? And I think that's the key. We got to send them to the right firehouses with the right people who can take them from that, you know, malleable recruit stage and really get them to that point where they can function on the fire ground. So I think that's where we come up short. You know, we don't necessarily do that. They come out of fire academy. Oh, great. We need a guy out at engine 14. Okay, he goes to engine 14. Engine 14 may not be the best place to put him. Okay. Right. Based on the personnel out there, based on the run activity, based on all those things. So we've got to get our folks to that tactical proficiency, able to generate tempo on the fire ground faster than the opponent's growing, able to work proficiently in a high threat, high stress environment. You know, I have this in one of my lectures. You know, there's a difference between being tactically proficient and knowing your job. Knowing your job is we go out behind the firehouse, it's 70 degrees out, you're in your t-shirt, you got your gloves on, you throw an extension ladder against the building. Well, you do it 10 times, man, perfect. You checked off all the blocks on the check sheet. Is that the same thing as being able to do that at 3 o'clock in the morning? It's 34 degrees out, the wind's blowing out of the south at 20 miles an hour, it's raining, you're on the 14th run of the day, and oh, by the way, you're throwing that ladder to do a VES because there's two kids in the window. Two different things.
Mind day.
Yeah. Two different things, okay? What I just described behind the firehouse is probably crawl, walk. Closer to walk. Mm-hmm. What I described on fire ground is run tactical proficiency. So I think what we have to do is we've got to get from that walk to tactical proficiency.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a shortcoming.
No, excuse me. Absolutely. You know, something that I see is we are great at maybe the crawl and components of the walk. How would you help some of your officers, you know, the rank and file to create some, what we talked about before, some self-awareness, some introspection, some self-reflection where they're like, hey, I'm good with the crawl walk, but I myself don't have necessarily the run tactical level acumen. And so for them, it's hard to even give it to their firefighters. And that's something that I think we see in our region is, hey, the people in charge now, yeah, we'll go train, we'll go do some things. But when you're at that run level where the rubber meets the road, and that is the essence and the core of our profession and our calling, that's where we're kind of falling short. And again, going back to like, that's when you step back instead of leaning into the fight. Yeah, let's dig in on that. How did you identify that within your organizations or within the people you work with, or what did you wish that you would do?
So, you know, what I say to that is, you know, there's a whole bunch of things. You know, number one, is we have to look at stress inoculation. And we have to include stress inoculation in our training. But where we make the mistake is before you can introduce stress inoculation, you have to have skill acquisition. That skill has got to be solid. Yeah. And for that skill to be solid, you've got to do sets and reps. You know, we send people to training that don't really understand how the human mind works. And I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. You know, I've read some books and I've associated myself with really, really smart people. Okay. Basically, in a high stress environment, there's three elements that, you know, work in the human mind: the conscious, the subconscious, and the self-image. You cannot multitask in the conscious mind. It is impossible to do that regardless of what anybody tells you. Now, what you can do is through sets and reps. And science tells us, depending on the complexity of the task, it could take thousands of reps. You can move physical tasks into the subconscious mind where yeah. you no longer have to think about, I don't have to, when I decide to put my air pack on, I don't have to think about it. I don't have to think about the steps. I've done it so many times. The neural pathways are hardwired to make that task instinctive and reflexive. I don't have to think about it. I can just throw my air pack on. I can put my air pack on as I'm walking up to a building, sizing up the building. And by the time I put my mask on, everything is done correctly. But it's because I've done it so many times. So that's the first thing I tell officers. You've got to do the sets and reps to hardwire the neural pathways to allow, you know, headspace in the conscious mind, because the conscious mind is where we evaluate hazards and we determine our course of action. So people need to understand this. When you start explaining this to people, they become aware of it. And they say, oh, okay. So now we can take these new people, we can take people in our firehouse, and we can concentrate on doing the sets and reps to get the skills hardwired and transferred into the subconscious mind. Once we are at that point, now we can start to inject a little bit of stress so that they don't have to think about, I don't really have to think about throwing the ladder. Now I can evaluate where I'm going to throw the ladder. So now we can do it in the daytime. Now we do it at night. Now we string some wires up as overhead obstacles so they don't really have to think about carrying the ladder. They're out here looking for the hazards. So I think that we need to do that. And to do that, our supervisors, our trainers, our bosses need to understand what I just explained. You know, there's so much to this, man. We can talk about this for hours and hours on end. You know, one of the things that I learned from reading the Talent Code by Coyle is that the more we do a task, there's a substance called myelin that wraps itself around the neurons that increases the speed of transmission. Well, the more we do the task, the more that myelin is produced, and the faster the impulses are transferred, which makes us more efficient. Now, how many people assigned to a training division understand that concept? And I think the important thing is, do we tell the new people, do we share this knowledge with the new people so they realize, listen, you know, I've been there before. You know, I've been a recruit. You know, we're going to put our air packs on. We're going to don air packs for an hour. Well, why are we doing that? I did it 10 times. I know how to do that. Now it just becomes a big suck fest that the instructors can have fun with us. Well, no, that's not why we're doing it. We're doing it to hardwire the neural pathways to make the task instinctive and reflexive. But if I don't explain that to the recruits, do they embrace that? You know, I think that's where we come up short. Now, another thing that I talk about a lot is, you know, Going Pro, you know, the book Going Pro by, you know, Karn. And what Karn says that there's, you know, there's naive practice and there's deliberate practice. Naive practice is I just go out and practice, assuming I'm going to get better. Deliberate practice is I have a knowledgeable coach there that can evaluate what I'm doing and give me that feedback to actually increase my efficiency. Yeah. So do we do that? I say this all the time, man. Go out, take your phone, you know, and just video people. Okay. I want you to know your impact. So I'm going to video you, and then we're going to go back and watch the video. And then you're going to see all these things where you can become more efficient and improve. So these are tools that I give officers that, you know, they can use with their personnel to increase this tactical proficiency. But I think, you know, we need to know these things. We need to understand these things. And then we need to incorporate.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, man, so many good things in there. And this, I know we were nerding out on this. I love the science behind the why, you know. Yeah. We understand so much more, and I've gleaned so much from other industries, as I know you have, just talking about some of these books. Like, you become task saturated because you don't have the mental bandwidth. So when you do kind of hit maybe more of a flow state, you're creating that bandwidth so you can actually receive more information. Buddy, Sam Hiddle out of Wichita.
Oh man, Sam's a great guy, man.
One of my favorite quotes I heard him say was, you can skip steps physically, you can't skip steps mentally.
Yep.
But when you start putting all those skills into that subconscious bucket, you know, you are allowing yourself more opportunity to receive that information. And you can, yeah, like he says, you're skipping steps, but you're not doing it mentally. You still have that awareness of it, but now you're just streamlining operations. And like you said, if it's observable, then you can, then it's measurable, and then you can repeat it, and you become more efficient over time, man. So I know we could pound on this for so long.
I use one example. You know, when I say that, you know, can take hundreds to thousands of repetitions to hardwire neural pathways, everybody gets intimidated by that number. But, you know, let's use a practical example. I mean, if I want to, you know, practice donning my mask with my gloves on, if I do it 10 times every 24 hours that I work, what's it going to take me? 5 minutes?
Right.
So if I do it 10 times every time, every 24 hour period I work, over the course of a month, I've did it 100 times. Over the course of a year, if we take out vacation time, whatever, I've done it 1,000 times. And it took me 5 minutes out of a 24 hour shift. Yeah. How good are you going to be? And I ask people this, how good are you going to be at the end of that year? You've donned your mask with your gloves on 1,000 times. How good are you going to be? When I say it takes thousands of repetitions, people get intimidated by that number. But like Rob, you know, Romero says, chunk it down a little bit. I'm not worried about getting 1,000 repetitions in. I'm worried about doing my 10 today. It's going to take me 5 minutes. You know, and you know, you don't have 5 minutes in a 24-hour shift? Let me see your phone. Let me see. Okay. Let me look and see how much time you spend scrolling. And then you tell me you don't have 5 minutes to invest in a skill that is going to produce tactical proficiency that could very well mean the difference in a serious event. You don't have 5 minutes?
Yeah. Come on. Yeah, wait. Your priorities are misaligned. Yeah, exactly. And then stretch that over a 20, 30, 40-year career, 1,000 reps per year. I mean, that is an insane amount of work within that 5 minutes stretched out your entire profession.
And I don't practice as much as I used to, but you know what? I can go out in the garage right now, put my gloves on, get my mask on. I can throw my mask on, boom, no problem. I mean, a little bit of rust, you know, a little rusty, you know, maybe not as quick as I used to be, but I'm not on active duty anymore. Okay? I don't practice to the extent when I was on active duty, it was something I practiced all the time. It's like, come on. Let me see your phone. And you know, as soon as you say that, man, it's really kind of funny because you watch your body language. As soon as you say that, I kind of move back a little bit. Like,
yeah, you got me. I mean, we're hammering on so many things. If you could go back and tell your younger self one piece of advice or one bit of mindset, or if it was for the new people coming in, or even I think it's probably easier for the new people coming in, that person that's like year 15, right? Maybe midpoint. Yeah. That's where people are either still on the path and they're grinding, or they pull back and they're on the couch and they're on the phone, right? I feel like that's pretty common. If you could just like grab somebody by the shoulders, whether that's you or that 15-year person, like what are you telling them? I got one thing to say.
Yeah. So I got a couple, but you know, what I always use is, you know, the standard I'm going to hold myself accountable to. And so every time I was hired, every time I took a promotion, I put my hand on the Bible and I swore that I would do my job to the best of my ability. And my family was always at these ceremonies.
Yeah.
Okay, so I say this, I'm my hand on the Bible, my family is watching me, and I'm saying that I am willing to do this job to the very best of my abilities. Well, you know, my family saw it. You know, so if I don't perform to that level, what I've done is I've just lied to my wife and kids. And I'm not going to lie to my wife and kids. So if you're looking for that thing to keep you going, that's what I use. That's what I tell people, man, you have taken an oath. And at some point in your career, payment's going to come due, man. You got to be ready. And if you're not ready, then what did the oath mean? Nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what I use. You know, my advice is don't be in a rush, because I promoted too early. You know, okay. I moved through rank really quickly, and I had some issues by not having spent enough time in one rank before I moved to another. You know, I thought I knew everything. And, you know, I got kicked in the teeth a couple of times. It's like, ooh, man, I'm not halfway as smart as I thought I was, because I didn't spend enough time really perfecting the one rank before I moved to the other. And if you're asking, you know, for me to be self-reflective and say, hey, you know, what was a problem? That was a big problem. I moved too quick.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, over the course of time, I've overcome that. And one of the reasons why I overcome that is I realized it, and I kind of went back and very discreetly kind of worked on those things that, you know, that put me in a bad position. But that's another piece of advice. Enjoy the position that you're in, you know. Yeah. And when you're really ready, you'll know it deep down inside. And then follow.
Yeah, yeah, that resonates with me. And I appreciate what you just said, like you're – when it's time to acknowledge that there was a shortcoming there, you did the work in the dark that nobody could see so that you were prepared.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the unsexy stuff that people fail to realize is the work that's done behind the scenes in the dark when no one else is what's going on in between your own 2 years, you know?
You know, there's a reason why I get up at 5:30 in the morning and I do PT early, because it is work in the dark, you know?
Yeah.
It allows me to, you know, work on these things. It allows me to go out there and do things that I'm really not good at, that, you know, I don't have to worry about people. Oh, you know, this guy says he's a PT stud, but he can't do this. Well, you know, whatever. You know, I'm going to just grind on my own. I'm going to figure out where my shortcomings are, and I'm going to work on them to fix them. You know, and I just do it in the dark, you know, and here's a whole nother rabbit hole, but I just read about this morning on the weekly thing that I get from Building the Elite, you know, train alone. Don't train with music, you know, put yourself in these difficult positions. I mean, look, there's a very positive element to having like a crew workout, bonding, building a team and whatever. But sometimes it's good to grind on your own, because then you get into yourself. Then you see what's really there. That's where you really fill up the tank of mental toughness for the day when it's really on. Because those days, it's what you do. It's, you know, you're not going to be in a situation where, you know, everybody can clap their hands and, you know, slap you on the back. You're going to end up in situations where it's a make or break split second, and it depends on your mental toughness and how much you have in the tank. And I think you fill that tank by grinding in the dark with no music, by yourself, pushing yourself, making yourself hold yourself accountable to your standard.
And Chief, we're cut from the same cloth. It like warms my heart knowing that where you're at in your journey, you're still getting after this. So I know people out there like, no, it's still possible. I think it's awesome to shut down all the external noise, the niceties, because then it forces you to get below the surface and lean into those voices in the head, right?
And all you got to do is just work hard to be the best version of yourself. I don't have to do anything that anybody else is doing, because everybody is different. Everybody's got different capabilities and skills or whatever. But when I'm done, I can sit there and say, man, I did the best that I can possibly do. And if you approach it like that, I don't think you'll come up short. I just don't.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't, you know, and I don't have to worry about running a 7 minute mile anymore because that's not who I am. But right. man, I can still grind. I can still yeah. grind pretty hard. And at the end of the 24 hour, you know, day at one bad tour, I'm saying, all right, man, well, we got it done.
Yeah.
My job, you know, I did what was expected of me. So,
yeah. And that's super cool. I didn't realize you had done one bad tour. I mean, that's 24 hours of a grind. And, you know, a lot of people say this is a young man's game. People also say you got to beware of the old guy in a young man's game. And you're still out there getting after it, man. I love hearing that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've gone down there. Basil's invited me to come down there twice. And I've got it on my calendar in October. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. If so I'm also a book nerd. I've always got one or two like in process, and I've got massive amounts in the queue. If you could sit there and say, hey, I know you've already mentioned a couple, but if you had one to three books like, hey, these are my top favorites, like I have mine that I recommend, like what are your top one to three?
So I think anything that Coyle writes, you know, The Talent Code, Coach Code, are very good. Yeah. I think On Combat.
Yeah.
By Grossman.
Yep.
Well, I think, you know, Firefighter Resiliency by George and Gillespie. And I forget who else was in on that. But, man, I know those guys. Man, I actually do stuff with them. So I think they're top-notch. And we got the Comfort Crisis.
So, yeah. Oh, man. So that's probably one of my most recommended books by Michael Easter.
Yep.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm reading Dana Alley's book right now, Hope Out of Darkness. And when I get done with that, you know, I'm going into a Comfort Crisis.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yep. That's probably one of my most recommended books. I love it. I love his stuff. And I think, Chief Dina, she's going to be on here hopefully in the next couple of weeks as well. That's another amazing human.
And oh, she is. You know. Yeah, I mean, if you talk about a subject matter expert, I don't think there's anybody who is as much of a subject matter expert in their field as Dana Alley is when it comes to mental health, sleep. I mean, she is just in a league all around. I mean, she.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, it's amazing. I'm so honored. And actually, that's a great segue into this point. And I think, you know, I actually next month on the career side, I'll hit 20. It would be like 22 years in the fire service overall. And some of my friends and I joke, even outside the fire service, as you get older, you know, when you're young, you walk into a room and you look for the adult in the room.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, you start looking around and then you realize like, ah, shit, I'm the adult. People are looking for me now, you know? And so sometimes it also means that as you, you know, go through this journey, that it's harder to find mentors because you are expected to be the mentor for other people, which I love. And I just say that to say, I consider myself so fortunate that we have people like yourself and Dina and like Dave LeBlanc and so many other men and women I've gotten to rub elbows with that have taken their time out, that are still putting out the good word and making me know that it's all these things are still possible. You know, you're still on the path. So incredibly fortunate for what you're doing. Even before we met, I've been watching what you're doing, and I have now two pages of notes and all these little lessons here as we've been going along, man. So I can't thank you enough. I know we're right about at an hour, and you know, if you would have me, I'd love to have you back on at some point, just because there's so many things we can unpack. But I want to be respectful of our time as well.
So I, you know, and I will say that, you know, I listened to your presentation, you know, I listened intently to what you had to say. And I think that, you know, I think that your knowledge, your presentation, the things that you talked about are so critical, are so important, and you're right on the mark. And for me, you know, and I say this all the time, man, the only reason why I got promoted is smart guys didn't show up on test day. So they looked around the room and said, give it to the tall guy with a mustache. So for me to be invited onto this forum and have conversations with somebody that I respect, that I think is a subject matter expert, is truly an honor. So I'm just humbled that we had the opportunity to spend this time together. And I would look forward to another session, absolutely.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think this is just the beginning, Chief. It means an absolute lot. I know that you're still out there putting out the good word. You know, there's many places where people can, I know you've been on podcasts and the writing, and you do these training and speeches, like where can people dig in on the good word with Chief Riley? Where can they find you?
So, my social media is always out there. I'm on Facebook, First Line Fire Service Training, LLC. I'm on Instagram, First Line 850. That's, our zip code down here. So, yeah. Then, my email is dennis.firstline@gmail.com. So if anybody wants to shoot me anything, I always have time. My goal is to help the fire service be a little bit better. And the way we do that is by making the people in the fire service better. So feel free to reach out, man, if there's anything I can do. I've been real busy, so I haven't been doing a lot of PT stuff on. I do a lot of my PT stuff on my Instagram. So I've been real busy, but things are starting to kind of slow down for me. So, we're going to kind of crank that up. I did something this weekend. It was really kind of, because I think, if you spend time investing in fitness, tactical, and being a tactical athlete, life happens, you get real busy. So I did something this weekend. I said, man, I'm going to do 3 rounds. I'm going to do 500, I'm going to row 500 meters. I'm going to do 5 overhead presses on each side. And I'm going to do 10 step ups on a box with 2 15 pound dumbbells. And I want to do 3 rounds of this. It's like, man, I haven't been working out a lot. I really don't know. So I turned on the camera and, man, I did 3 rounds.
Awesome.
And the message is, if you're spending the time, quality time over decades, life happens and, you don't get to train every day, but that level of fitness is still there. So when you get back at it, it's like, all right, I did it, man. I could have done 4 rounds. So the payoff comes when life happens. And I say that to people who are in the middle, like, man, I got young kids, man. We got dance practice. We got baseball. I got this. My wife is working opposite of me. We got a mortgage payment. We just bought. And all these things happen. It's like, well, yeah, it happens to all of us. So don't worry, I always say, give yourself a little bit of grace. Man, I haven't trained in a couple of days. It's all right. Give yourself a little bit of grace. If you have been that disciplined person that's invested over the long haul, and it'll be okay. And then all of a sudden, things will slow down a little bit and you'll get back onto your schedule. You'll get back to doing your breath work and your yoga and training. And, you'll go out in the garage on Saturday, man. And, man, you're going to hang Marcus's flag up that says liability or asset. And like, I got to crank it, So I cranked out 3 rounds. And quite honestly, I could have cranked out 4. So, that's just a little nugget for the end.
Man, I love that. The payoff comes when life happens. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're denying complacency a chance. You're pushing off degradation for another day, right? You're somebody that can be counted on, and I love that.
Yeah, maybe when I'm in my 90s, I won't get the 3 rounds. But I got them this time.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And that's what the cool thing about these workouts is that they're infinitely scalable. I say, you're just getting out there doing the work. If you need to change the weights, change the weights. That's fine. But you're still moving. You're still getting in 3 rounds. And you're doing it in the dark, so you can come back another day,
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Dude, this has been an absolute honor. I appreciate it. It's been so cool to meet you and rub elbows with you, and I'm sure there's a few.